and welcome back to Raya Affairs. My name is Francia Morales, and I'll be your host for this episode. Raya is a youth-led international think tank that translates the abstract world of international affairs by simplifying rather than generalizing. Raya is a place where you come to learn about the stories and worries of political leaders, the behind-the-scenes of decision-makers, and how politics impacts and changes your life. This is Raya Affairs, filling you in wherever you are. As always, I would like to give a disclaimer that expressed opinions in this episode are welcome, even though they might not be a direct reflection of Raya, as we specialize in unbiased writing. This episode is the second of a series of six as part of the IE Raya Summer Research Program of 2024. Raya has invited 12 IE students to join our think tank and spend 9 weeks researching a figure from around the world to try to answer a simple question. Are they a climate leader? During their research, students have done a deep dive of the person's background, policies, and the impact of said policies in an effort to bring light to the diverse ways in which every person, no matter the role they play in society, can contribute to the global climate change policy framework. In today's episode, we have Clara Chikuze and Majak Prokopiuk to talk about Hage Geingob from Namibia. Would you like to introduce yourselves to our audience?
Yes, of course. So hi, everyone. Thank you, Francia, for having me today on the podcast. So a little bit about myself. My name is Maja Prokopiuk. I'm Polish, but I'm currently living in Spain as I'm completing my studies at IE University with dual degree in laws and international relations. And I signed up for the summer research program with Raya and IE University because I'm interested in global affairs and sustainability. Therefore, the project really suited my interests. And I am really excited to be with you today.
Thank you, Maja. It's really nice to have you. Clara, how about you?
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Francia, for having me. My name is Clara Chikuze, and I am from Malawi. I am currently studying at IE University in Spain, where I am in my third year of studying international relations and business administration. So I am participating in this year's summer research program with Raya because I am interested in learning more about how leaders develop climate change policies, and Raya's methodology allows me to do just that. So I'm very excited to be here and talk to you today, Francia.
Thank you, and thank you both for your introduction. Before we dive into our deep interview about the report that you're putting together, could you tell us each, in the same order, which leader, either dead or alive, who has impacted the world would you want to have a conversation with? Or maybe dinner?
That is a really good question. And I think a leader whose story is the most inspiring and I would like to talk with them about their story is Lech Wałęsa. He used to be the leader of the Solidarity Movement, which helped to abolish communist regime and the rule of Soviet Union in Poland in 1989. And he also became the first president of Democratic Poland. And what is really inspiring to me is that he started as a humble electrician in a really small town. And by his determination and values, he managed to contribute to such a change. And he even managed to win a Nobel Peace Prize.
Whoa, that's really impressive. Clara, what about you?
Okay, so for me, the leader that I would like to talk to is Kamuzu Banda. So he was the one that fought for Malawi's independence, and he was an educated physician who studied in the US and the UK, and he returned from exile to lead Malawi's independence in 1964. So he focused on building up the country's infrastructure, and that is literally the main infrastructure that we have till today. So, yeah. An interesting fact about him is that after he became president, he was declared the president for life in 1971, which I find very, very intriguing. So I would like to find out where he got his motivation from and what inspired him to do what no one else in Malawi thought was possible.
Wow, okay. So we have two modern founding fathers as the dinner havers. Thank you so much for your answers. And now we can dive into your reports. So before we begin, and before we explore all of the policies that are in place in Namibia, could you please tell us, who is Hage Geingob?
Okay, so Hage Geingob was a giant in Namibian politics. He was born in 1941 and he became the first prime minister of independent Namibia in 1990. So this was a huge milestone for him. Later, he took on the office of Minister of Trade and Industry, but he went back to being prime minister later on. And in 2015, he became the president of Namibia. And after notable economic and climate reforms, he unfortunately passed away this year in 2024. And I am sure his legacy still lives on in Namibia to today.
Just adding on to what Clara just said, I think that it's really interesting and important to add that before he pursued his political career, he was a teacher, actually. And since he was still working in the era of racial segregation, he was forced to be a part of so-called Bantu system, which divided the educational opportunities according to one's race and ethnicity. And it was deeply against Gengob's values. So soon after protesting, he was forced to, of course, leave his job teaching. And he went living in exile for almost 30 years in Botswana, US and the UK. And then he was getting his international education.
Wow, okay. That's one way to take advantage of being exiled, is to get a bunch of degrees. That's really interesting. Thank you for introducing our character for today. And now going into a bit of background of the country, could you please tell us what are the main climatic challenges facing Namibia today? What did Hage Geingob have to work with?
I think the first environmental challenge that comes to my mind thinking about this is desertification. Desertification is a process of land degradation when basically a fertile land becomes a desert and therefore is no longer arable. And since 9% of Namibia's GDP is based on agricultural sector, it's a huge challenge for the local economy. Moreover, desertification is a huge challenge for the population, who are oftentimes living in rural areas and are relying on agriculture, as 70% of Namibians are engaged in subsistence farming. And of course, as a result of desertification, people can no longer sustain themselves, which is obviously a huge challenge for the country's leader.
So on top of desertification, Namibia also faces extreme weather events. So this includes flooding, droughts, and changing rainfall patterns. And for the heavy rains, it causes severe flooding. It's like displacing people, damaging infrastructure, and isolating communities. And all this leads to food shortages and economic hardships. In terms of the droughts, they have had like 6 national emergencies, which have led to severe food insecurity and increased migration. And the economic impact of this includes over 275 million Namibian dollars in emergency relief costs. So climate change is expected to reduce rainfall, so threatening agriculture, mining, and fisheries, which are the main industries in Namibia, and potentially leading to poverty and food insecurity. So these disruptions to key economic sectors, combined with climate-induced migration, they worsen urban overcrowding and disease spread.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I was reading yesterday to prepare for the episode, and I found out that mining makes up a quarter of the Namibian economy. And so I find it really interesting that you bring that up. And how did Geingob help Namibia address these issues while he was president?
So obviously, climatic challenges were significantly impeding Namibia's development, and Geingob sought to use the richness of natural resources and geographical location of Namibia to get international funding to contribute to further development of the state. So since Namibia has, as we mentioned, very high temperatures, extremely high insolation, Namibian solar potential is extremely high. Also, the proximity to the ocean is very, very useful for development of many sorts of renewable sources of energy. And all of these factors put Namibia in a great advantage to in potential future development of such intricate technological. And this is how the idea to make Namibia the green hydrogen powerhouse came around. So Genkop realized that given the planned amount of green hydrogen energy produced by Namibia, it will significantly surpass its needs, and the country's plan to export it not only to Africa but also all around the world, increasing the state's revenue and thus potential for development. Clara, do you have anything to tell us about it?
Yeah, so on top of what Maya said, an initiative that we have to talk about is the Hyphen Project. So it's a partnership between a Namibian company and a German company, and it's the first large-scale green hydrogen project. So it has already secured a massive $10 billion, and currently it has made significant strides. So for example, it has signed partnerships with European customers to supply green ammonia, and it has teamed up with a company to send this green ammonia and green hydrogen into Europe using the port of Rotterdam. But the project is more than just green hydrogen. It's a major boost for Namibia's development. It's creating thousands of jobs, improving local infrastructure, and attracting even more international investments. So by growing its renewable energy sector, Namibia can diversify its economy and improve the livelihoods of its people as well.
These seem like really large undertakings for a country that, as you already mentioned, is maybe stalled in some factors of development. And as you already mentioned, development was one of Genkop's main objectives for Namibia. So what are the main limitations that Genkop face when implementing these policies?
The first limitation that comes to my mind right away is, of course, the money. Because as Namibia, as you mentioned, is still developing and it mainly bases its industry on agriculture, which is in danger due to the climatic changes, the financial situation might become very difficult for Namibia very soon, especially to implement such expensive policies as development of the green hydrogen technologies. Luckily, Oschwiller-Plant, which is a consortium of three German technological companies that contribute to the green hydrogen project in Namibia, has received over 13 million euro from German federal grant, which helped a lot with the project. Nonetheless, Namibia is still seeking for an investment to improve its financial standing and implement such policies more effectively and efficiently in the future.
Yeah, and on top of finances being a major challenge, we have resistance to some of the projects, like the flagship project, the Hyphen project that we talked about. It has been receiving some resistance. So they had a plan to expand the project's facility into the Shark Island in Namibia for green energy production. And the Nama ethnic group, they opposed it because the site is sacred to their community. So just for context, the Shark Island used to have a concentration camp run by the German authorities in the early 1900s, where around 3,000 locals were killed. So just to show you how important it is to them, the Nama Leaders Association of Namibia said it would be like expanding there would be bringing up a hurtful and painful past for them. And additionally, another group that showed openly its resistance was the Affirmation Repositioning Movement. And it is a political and social movement that focuses on land reform, urban land allocation, and broader social justice issues. And they demanded that the Namibian government be granted a free 24% stake in the Hyphen project and called for transparency and public accountability in the negotiation process. However, the government wanted to buy this stake and they would buy it using loans and grant agreements from equity. So as you can see, these forms of resistance and demands significantly hindered the implementation of Gengob's hydrogen policies.
Wow, okay. So what gave Gengob the motivation to overcome these challenges, or how was he able to surpass these kinds of resistances?
So his main motivation in life overall was the development of Namibia, which is the main theme of his life, definitely, as a leader. So as he was born and raised still in the post-colonial and apartheid-driven Namibia, his goal was to make independent Namibia strong, as he was the first prime minister of the independent state. And he aimed to achieve this development through vast economic expansion. And he recognized that increasing Namibia's potential for development is driven by getting foreign direct investments for international actors. And these actors would direct their funds towards climate action. And that was one of his main themes in his political career, because he was one of the main actors drafting the Namibian constitution in the 1990s, he focused on the significance of environmental protection and preservation for the welfare of Namibians. And he lived by his words. He showed his dedication to climate action, as in 2011, on the basis of his vast work accumulated, the first climate action plan was drafted in Namibia. And as one of the examples of how foreign direct investment is crucial for Namibia's development and was driven by Gengob's leadership is, of course, the Green Hydrogen Project.
So was Gengob ultimately successful in implementing these policies? I mean, you already mentioned a few of the obstacles, but in terms of his goal to increase Namibia's development and mitigate some of the effects of climate change that Namibia is facing, was he successful?
So Hage Geingob definitely succeeded in transforming Namibia. And even though he started his presidency in 2015, his hydrogen policies really kicked off in 2020, 2022. And this was mainly because of the increasing pressure of the growing environmental challenges that he couldn't ignore. He needed to address them. So once he got going, these policies really paid off. The Hyphen Hydrogen Project is a prime example. It's already up and running as of now, and it's creating plenty of jobs and making a real difference. And we can see that Gengob's vision was so strong that even after he died, the new interim president is still pushing this project forward. So it shows how successful his policy has been. And clearly, Gengob has managed to set Namibia on a new path towards sustainability and economic growth, leaving a lasting impact on the country.
Wow, that's really impressive. Given Gengob's impact, not only in Namibia's climate policy path, but overall in the political culture of Namibia, setting them both on, let's say, a developmental and a sustainable path forward, what would you say other policymakers can learn from the case of Namibia's climate policies?
Okay, so overall, the case of Namibia's climate policies teach us that even in challenging situations, transformative change is possible. So as we talked about, Namibia was facing significant environmental and economic challenges, yet it turned these into opportunities for growth and development. So by implementing forward-thinking climate policies, Namibia has shown us that it's possible to address pressing environmental issues while also driving economic progress. And another important lesson that Namibia has shown us is that climate policies are not just about saving the planet. They are powerful tools for national development and improving people's livelihoods. So by embracing innovative green energy solutions like the Hyphen project that we were talking about, Namibia has turned environmental challenges into opportunities for economic growth, job creation, and sustainable development. So this example just demonstrates that proactive climate policies can lead to a brighter, more prosperous future for literally any country. What do you think, Maya?
Oh, I completely agree that Namibia has set an amazing example for many countries' future development. I also think it's important to add that Namibia's shift towards the green hydrogen will completely change the dynamic on the energy market, because not only will the country become self-sufficient energy-wise very, very soon as the project will continue, but also means that Namibia will stop importing energy and fossil fuels from neighboring countries in South Africa, which will also change the dynamic between them. But Namibia will create enough of energy to become sort of a global hub for green hydrogen, and with a great export potential, which can mean various different changes for all of us around the world, not only in neighboring countries in Africa, but also, for instance, in Europe with the growing alliance with Germany.
Wow, it is really incredible to think about the not only local but global impact that's maybe not small steps, because this is obviously a really comprehensive scheme of both development and energy transition, which is incredible in itself, but it's impressive to think about how that can have both a domestic and rather international impact in ways that Namibia may not have done before, that it's not only going to change the lives of those domestically, but it might even change the lives of those that live outside the country. And I think that that's a really good note to take us to the conclusion of this interview and the main question of your report. In your own words, would you say that Hage Geingob is a climate leader?
We agreed that Hage Geingob is a climate leader, but on top of that, he is a development-driven leader who recognize the power of climate action in order to achieve foreign direct investment, which increase Namibia's potential to achieve economic stability and ensure stable progress. Clara, what do you think?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. So as we've seen, even though he passed away, Geingob's policies still remain relevant, and we can still see the effects of his climate policies, most importantly, on Namibia's development and the environment. So he has set the foundation for ongoing progress in Namibia, and I'm sure Namibia still continues to benefit from these initiatives. So yeah, definitely he is a climate leader.
While I'm listening to you, I have to agree with you. I do also think that there is a very good argument to make that Hage Geingob is a climate leader, especially because he's harnessing the power of climate policy in order to drive his country forward, or he was, rather. And it's also really incredible that both of you get to write this report and honor the memory of what he has left in Namibia and honor the legacy that he has set forth. And hopefully we will see all of the goals that he put into these policies come to fruition in Namibia, and we'll be on the lookout. Thank you both, Clara and Maya, for coming to speak with me today. I've had the best time listening to the both of you talk about your report and listening about Hage Geingob's policies.
Thank you so much,
Francia. Thank you for having us, Francia.
And that concludes this episode for today. If you liked today's episode and you're interested in what Maya and Clara had to say, make sure to go read their report as well as their article at riotgroup.org. If you like this episode, also make sure to share with your friends and stay tuned for the third part on all of our social media like Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. We'll see you next time, and thank you for listening.